Good morning. This is Brian Trumbore with your Week in Review for Saturday, July 3rd. Suffice it to say, the first half was a lousy one. The major equity averages are down for the year. What was once thought to be a solid global recovery is looking more like quicksand, and we have an historic oil spill that continues to poison the Gulf of Mexico and twin deficits, both in debt and political leadership around the world. So, what did I say on January 2nd in forecasting the year? In part, I fall firmly in the camp that the deleveraging process for the consumer is far from over and that spending won't return until the job picture improves, which I just don't see happening in any big way. I also don't see housing coming back significantly in terms of median home prices, owing to the still serious foreclosure issue. It's a year that's also going to be dominated to a great extent by further issues on the state and local government front, as in revenues won't nearly meet expenses, which will lead to even further layoffs. It's about deficits, and this is an issue worldwide. 2010 is about still stagnant, if not falling, wages. This year we'll also see an ever-increasing anger with government and the healthcare debate, and this will best be manifested in what is going to be an unruly midterm election. 2009 is about survival. 2010 is going to be about shattered expectations and dreadful pictures on television that will depress the hell out of us. It's going to be about Iran, for sure, but also a heavy dose of Pakistan as it hurtles towards collapse with unfathomable consequences. It's going to be about terror attacks around the globe, including a major incident in Latin America. So on this last bit, as I looked at the year ahead back in January, the geopolitical angle, we'll see how the second half of the year pans out. Otherwise, I'm not changing a thing in terms of my outlook, including my equity prediction for 2010, wherein I said stocks will finish the year in negative territory, with the S&P 500 and Dow Jones down 12%, NASDAQ off 6%. So far, so good. Here, though, I won't toast myself with premium until closer to year-end in this regard. I also had this last January 2nd. Here's what you need not worry about in 2010. Inflation. More time has been wasted on this single topic over the past years than just about anything else. Ditto the plight of the dollar. Yours truly has not fallen into these traps of punditry for two simple reasons. Regarding the former, talk to me when the job picture is greatly improved, period, not before. Regarding the greenback, yes, I'm well aware of our extreme budget issues and the risk China will stop buying our treasuries. But I'm also well aware, while others miss, that just about everyone else in the world has the same deficit issues we do, and ergo, the dollar is still as good, if not better, than most alternatives. Let alone the fact that when the geopolitical picture really heats up, money will come flooding into our currency. Those screaming about these two topics will, it's true, one day be right, but we're nowhere close to that time. So that's what I said on January 2nd. What we learned this spring was that the geopolitical picture was turned on its head by the Euro crisis, which I nailed definitively on February 20th, but won't bore you with my defining moment on the topic of debt today. In the here and now, though, all the talk concerns a double-dip recession. One problem. There is no clear definition of just what this is, though I would subscribe to one that says we go from recession to growth, then back to recession in terms of recording two actual quarters of negative GDP again. Is that where we're headed? I don't know if this is how the numbers will play out, but it's largely irrelevant. The point is, I thought the second half would be worse than the first. That certainly seems to be in the cards, and is already feeling like a double dip in terms of market and consumer sentiment, whether the just completed quarter or the next two are actually negative or not. It remains as it always has been, about housing and jobs, the health of both having everything to do with consumer and business confidence, and thus consumption and capital spending. All of these then feed into the markets for good or bad, and what is normally a positive feedback loop, more good years than bad, has been a negative one since April's highs. Let's look at housing. The news just continues to get worse. This week saw a record drop in pending home sales. The folks who put together the S&P Case-Shiller Home Price Index continue to maintain progress will be measured in years. There has been no inventory improvement or lessening in foreclosure pressures. On the latter, the banks continue to step up property seizures, and builders are cutting prices. When looking at the median existing home price, though, which is the only fair way to judge where we stand nationwide. I said back in the fall of 2008 that we would bottom in the April-May 2009 time frame and then sit there for an extended period of time, a forecast I nailed, with April 2009 seeing a median existing home price bottom of $166,500. After a rapid rise in succeeding months, we then hit $164,600 in February 2010, and May's price came in at $179,600. So to those who say we're going to see another leg down, yes, we will, but I'd argue essentially back to the April 2009 low and perhaps a few percentage points below that. Bottom line, we bottomed spring 2009 and have essentially gone nowhere since, relative to the 40% or so decline off the peak in many U.S. markets. So housing remains in a putrid state, as does the job outlook. On Friday, we learned the private sector added all of 83,000 jobs for the month of June, though the unemployment rate fell to 9.5%. We all know it's more like 16.5% to 17% in the real world, and many have simply stopped looking. And the Obama administration is praying that somehow it can get down to below 9% before the midterm election. But I told you about 2 months ago what others continue to miss. The last employment report before November 2nd is October 1, September's jobs figure. Just three more months of data for this highly charged number employed on the campaign trail. Economist Mark Zandi reiterated yesterday that despite the decline to 9.5%, based on anomalies in the data, we are still headed back above 10% before any move below 9. Regardless, with all the renewed uncertainty around the world, there is zero reason for corporate America to go on a hiring binge. So that's my view on housing and jobs. What do others think? Economist Paul Krugman has a highly visible perch at the New York Times, along with the Nobel Prize, so you can't just ignore him if, like me, you read all sides of all issues. When he opines, as he did this week, quote, "We are now, I fear, in the early stages of a third depression. It will probably look more like the Long Depression of the 1870s than the much more severe Great Depression. But the cost to the world economy and above all to the millions of lives blighted by the absence of jobs will nonetheless be immense. And this third depression will be primarily a failure of policy. Around the world, most recently at last weekend's deeply discouraging G20 meeting, governments are obsessing about inflation when the real threat is deflation, preaching the need for belt tightening when the real problem is inadequate spending. After all, unemployment, especially long-term unemployment, remains at levels that would have been considered catastrophic not long ago and shows no signs of coming down rapidly." That was Paul Krugman. It's this long-term nature of the current jobs picture that is so depressing, and as a Pew Research Center survey showed, it is killing sentiment. Among adults 62 and older who are still working, 35% say they have postponed retirement. 6 in 10 working adults between ages 50 and 61 say they may be forced to do the same. 4 in 10 say they have tapped savings in retirement accounts to make ends meet. A quarter say they have borrowed money from someone. Michael Fletcher, Washington Post. When looking at the global outlook, PIMCO's Bill Gross wrote this week. While technological innovation, much like Moore's Law, seems to have endless promise, population growth in numerous parts of the developed world is approaching a dead end. Not only will it become more difficult to transfer high existing debt burdens onto the small shoulders of future generations, but the over-levered, aging global boomers themselves will demand a disproportionate piece of stunted future goods and services, without, it seems, the ability to pay for it. Creditors, sensing the predicament, hold back, as they recently have in Greece and other southern European peripherals, or in the U.S. itself, as lenders demand larger down payments on new home mortgages and other debt extensions. "We overdid a good thing, and now the financial reaper is at the door." Scythe and financial bill in one hand, with the other knocking on door after door of previously unsuspecting households and sovereigns to initiate a standard of living death sentence. Bill Gross continues, "The developing nations are not growing fast enough, at least internally, to return global growth to its old standards, and so they produce for export, not internal consumption, and in the process leave a gaping hole in what is known as global aggregate demand. Developed nation consumers are maxed out because of too much debt, and developing nations don't trust themselves to stretch their necks for the delicious leaves of domestic consumption just above. It is this lack of global aggregate demand resulting from too much debt in parts of the global economy and not enough in others that is the essence of the problem. That was Bill Gross of PIMCO. Staying on the global theme, the UK's austerity program is expected to cost 1.3 million public and private sector jobs over the next 5 years, though the Cameron government says through the spending discipline, confidence will return and those 2.5 million new jobs will be created by 2015. I'll light a candle for these projections. Spain's AAA credit rating was put under review by Moody's, which was a source of some of the market's angst this week. But on the other hand, the European Central Bank had to lend far less than anticipated to financial institutions rolling over paper from the crisis of a year ago. So perhaps these stresses on European banks aren't quite as severe as once thought, which was one of the reasons for that currency's rebound in recent days. But then you had massive strikes in Greece and Spain as the people erupted anew over the austerity measures being taken, and German Chancellor Angela Merkel is on increasingly shaky political ground following the narrow victory of her hand-picked choice to be president. In Germany, the people are still up in arms over there being a huge percentage of the EU rescue facility. The last thing Europe needs is instability in this critical nation. Turning to Asia, it's still all about China, 24/7, and will be, globally, the balance of 2010 at least. The Purchasing Managers Index on manufacturing fell to 52.1 for June, still above the 50 dividing line between growth and contraction, but less than expected and far below its peak levels. The exact same, incidentally, could be said of the PMI in Japan, South Korea, and Taiwan, which were all between 53.3 and 53.9, but well off the highs of earlier in the year. So, is China's government successfully engineering a soft landing, or is it in the process of crashing from the 11.9% growth it exhibited in the first quarter? I maintain it's the former, as does noted economist Stephen Roach, who says China's growth rate will slow to 8 to 9% later in the year, quote, worst case. But the head of China's National Bureau of Statistics called the PMI, quote, grim. I just believe that the Chinese government is doing exactly what it said it would. Premier Wen Jiabao also made another call for higher wages to head off unrest, and this is happening at light speed. 10 provinces this week announced wage hikes. It's all part of the effort to rebalance China's economy away from a focus on exports and towards a more sustainable balance between exports and domestic consumption. But General Electric CEO Jeffrey Immelt had some scathing things to say about China this week. As reported in the Financial Times, Immelt warned that the world's largest manufacturing company was contemplating better prospects elsewhere in resource-rich countries and that those nations that did not want to be colonized by Chinese investors. I really worry about China, Mr. Immelt told an audience of dozens of top Italian executives, referring to the Chinese government, which he accused of becoming increasingly protectionist. I'm not sure that in the end they want any of us to win or any of us to be successful. Then Immelt took off on President Obama, lamenting what he called a terrible national mood and expressing concern that overregulation in response to the global financial crisis would damp a tepid U.S. economic recovery. People are in a really bad mood in the U.S. We, the U.S., are a pathetic exporter, said Immelt. We have to become an industrial powerhouse again, but you don't do this when government and entrepreneurs are not in sync. So, what of Obama? The Wall Street Journal editorialized on Friday of the tax trap that he's been laying for Republicans. Quote, Mr. Obama's plan has been to increase spending to new and what he hopes will be permanent heights. Then as the public and financial markets begin to fret about deficits and debt, he'll claim that the debt is unsustainable and that the only responsible policy is to raise taxes. Ergo, VAT-land. Erwin Stelzer writes in the London Times. Businessmen are increasingly worried. The Business Roundtable, a group of establishment top executives who have avoided confrontation so as to maintain access to the White House, are suddenly willing to criticize a sitting president. The head of the group, Ivan Seidenberg, whose day job is running Verizon Communications, claimed Obama is creating an increasingly hostile environment for investment and job creation. The Economist magazine, a self-styled Obama supporter, put it more graphically. Obama has all too often given the impression that capitalism is something unpleasant he found on the sole of his sneaker. Erwin Stelzer continues, One top administration official tells me he spends a lot of time trying to persuade the president that his anti-business rhetoric has serious consequences at a time when the economic recovery rests heavily on inducing businesses to invest. The government is now too much in debt to add much demand to GDP. Consumers, too, remain heavily indebted and too worried to increase spending very much. That leaves business, its cash pile high and rising, its entrepreneurs ever ready to innovate and invest. Unfortunately, those animal spirits have been tamed by the prospect of increased regulation, tax rises the president will levy on the rich and their legatees, and naming and shaming by the president should they do something of which he disapproves. Stelzer continues, "You don't have to be an insurance executive to identify with those hauled into the White House and told by the president that although he has no legal authority to do so, if they raise premiums to reflect the cost imposed by his health care bill, he will make them regret it." Believe that he would. Believe, too, that many Americans, and not only businessmen, are uncomfortable with the importation of Chicago-style kill-or-be-killed politics into the hallowed halls of the White House. None of this is to deny that the recent drop in sales of new houses to a record low, and the fact that almost two-thirds of Americans know a non-family member who has lost a job, or are not conducive to euphoria. Reality bites, but so does a president seemingly eager to turn the private sector into his pet whipping boy. That was Erwin Stelzer of the London Times. With government and the healthcare debate, and this will best be manifested. Stocks took it on the chin in the second quarter to the tune of 10% for the Dow Jones and 12% for both the S&P 500 and NASDAQ, and it was another dismal week as double-dip fears gripped investors. It didn't help that the economic news, including the labor report, wasn't great, particularly May reading on factory orders down 1.4% and a June ISM reading that, while at 56.2, was less than expected. Plus, we had a downright horrible slide in June consumer confidence, almost a 10-point drop in a month and far worse than projected. For the week, the Dow lost 4.5% to 96.86, the lowest weekly close since last October. Plus, the Dow is on a 7-session losing streak, again the worst since last fall. For its part, NASDAQ tumbled 5.9% and now sits at its worst level since October 30th of 2009. That's all for this week. I will not be doing a podcast next time. I'm going to be down in Orange Beach, Alabama. So please read my Week in Review commentary from down there next Saturday. Have a great 4th of July and a great week.